Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an incredible show for you today. I just want to say happy Wednesday, happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone who celebrates. Now, I'm not necessarily someone who celebrates St. Patrick's Day, but hey, a nice excuse to relax, have drinks with friends. I'm always up for it. So before I introduce today's guest, I'm just so excited for you to meet them. But before I introduce them, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do. And that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. There's some business owner, entrepreneur in your life who needs this information. They need to learn from our experts. Maybe there's some advice, tips, strategies that our experts are going to bring to you today. And your friends, your network will not have this information unless you go ahead and share it with them. So send that text, send that tweet, post that message, but let them know the Roundtable Talk Show is live, because friends do not let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're going ahead and introducing your friends to the Roundtable Talk Show, I'm going to go ahead and introduce some amazing people. We're going to start with our very first guest, Mr. Bob Wheeler. He is certified CPA and core energetic practitioner, inspirational speaker, author, and CFO of the world famous Comedy Store in Los Angeles. Bob Wheeler inspires people with his financial acuity, compassion, and genuine energy, sharing his simple and effective concept, the money nerve, regarding emotions and money. He teaches people from all walks of life how to create a healthy relationship with money. Bob is a popular speaker, workshop presenter, thought leader, and TV podcast guest. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Excited to be here.
You do so many different things. I'm excited. So me being me, I'm going to do what I normally do, and that's find ways to expand my reach. You're the owner of the Comedy Store.
I'm the CFO.
The CFO of the Comedy
Store. CFO of the Comedy Store.
Oh, so yeah. You get to count the money.
I get to count the money. Not counting a lot right now because we're closed. But it was good counting before then.
Pre-COVID.
Pre-COVID. Pre-COVID. So, absolutely.
So tell us about your journey, Bob. Who are you? What are you passionate about?
Absolutely. So like everybody, I wanted to be an attorney when I was growing up. And then I met a bunch of attorneys and decided I'd rather go into accounting because it was something that I was doing just to keep my grade point up. And so I started doing accounting and secretly had a passion for comedy as well. And so I was doing comedy to pay the bills and the accounting, because that's the fun part. And what happened was, after I got my CPA license and a lot of my friends were comics and entrepreneurs, I realized that even though I had this great title and all these things, financially, I kept self-sabotaging. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my artist friends would talk about, oh, you have to be a starving artist to be a real artist. And I was just discovering, even with my clients, my tax meetings would turn into therapy sessions. And I realized that making sense of numbers wasn't just a black and white, oh, 2 + 2 = 4. But if I have a belief that I can't be successful in a business, or I don't deserve to have a lot of money, or I need to be small, I'm undeserving. And all of this started to come together. So I started looking at my own financial self-sabotage. I started talking with clients and really exploring that. And the thing I kept hearing was, everybody kept saying, I'm the only person that doesn't know about financial literacy. I'm so ashamed of my past financial choices. And so I decided to write this book, The Money Nerve, because I wanted to start conversations about money to help remove that stigma of shame, and so that people would know that we're not all alone, because we're not all running around talking about, look at my bankruptcy, look at my credit card debt, look at all these failed things that I did. And so I really wanted to just start making it okay to, like, having had a past where we didn't get it right, and learning to just have a healthier relationship with money. And I think for me, I was socialized to believe that I am my accomplishments. So that the more money I have in the bank account, the more certificates I had, the more value I brought. And I took a couple trips to Africa where people don't have all that and they're incredibly happy. And so I had this big mind shift and really started to learn to be a lot more grateful and appreciative about what I did have instead of what I didn't have. And so I've just worked with people. I do workshops. I've gotten certified in core energetics, which is a somatic therapy, and just working with people to embody their financial traumas and help people figure out their journey so they can work on their financial beliefs, blocks, and have a much more healthier relationship with money.
I think that's amazing. It's wonderful. And I'm listening to you speak, and it's funny because I'm a talk show host. I love to just have fun and comedy. I put on comedy shows, but most people don't know I went to college to be an accountant. But then I was like, I can't do this. Like, I just round the numbers. Like, I don't care. I just can't sit here and count pennies for the rest of my life. So I get it. I understand. But I'd be the one in the comedy store telling the jokes. That's my passion. Now, Bob, I am going to come back to you. But I just want to go ahead and introduce my next guest, Mr. Sean Hosman. Sean has more than 20 years of experience working closely with public and private juvenile and adult justice agencies and large human services systems. He is a member of the Utah State Bar, the Colorado State Bar, and the American Bar Association. He is also a member of the Motivational Interviewing Network of Trainers, MINT, and continues to train at least annually with the authors of MINT, William Miller, PhD. Good morning, Sean, how are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
I don't know if you noticed, but that was like a strategic way to go in a different direction, because Bob was talking about being an accountant and being a lawyer, which he always wanted to do. And I was like, you know what? Sean's a lawyer. He can tell us how that worked out.
I can actually, but I am a lawyer. I'm an attorney. And Bob, I wish I was a CPA sometimes and an accountant so I could figure out the money. I think I went to law school to avoid math. But yeah, I don't practice law. I'm actually sort of a serial entrepreneur, and I found a passion and a mission and sort of a different part of life. But my law degree has helped me through everything. One of the best educations anybody could ever get.
What makes you say that? What other ways has it helped you, just experience with life? Maybe you had a bad situation and you know the laws, you know the rules.
Well, that's a funny prompt actually, but because there is a story there, but no, it helps you, train you how to think. Really to how to check sources and figure out what the law or what philosophy or principles or, you know, how to really navigate through the world, since there are a lot of legal issues. But I practiced law for about 3 years and I just couldn't do it anymore. I worked with wonderful people, but I wanted to build and create, and I just didn't want to facilitate either a lawsuit or a conversation or a negotiation. That was other people's business that I was trying to help. I wanted to build solutions and build things of value for society. So I left the law and started creating businesses.
Okay, well, tell us about your passion and what you're doing now.
My passion is just really the underdog. It's really a lot to do with racial equity. It's a lot to do with oppressed and marginalized populations. And you can find that in a lot of different places, whether it's racial issues, gender issues, LGBTQ issues. But I don't have to look very far, much further than really the criminal justice system, to find some of the worst examples of marginalized human beings and their families. And so I actually work in one of the companies I own. I do predictive analytics and software and decision support systems for prisons, jail, probation, parole, sheriffs, so that they can manage those human beings in a more productive, successful, dignified way. But then I actually, like I said, one of your questions was a prompt. While I was around the country really working on criminal justice systems and trying to make them work better, I myself became an alcoholic and an addict. I went to jail 12 times in a 2-year period between 2010 and 2012. And when I got clean and sober in July of 12, I really was gonna hang up my business, because I sort of, my mugshot was online and I was here trying to help criminal justice systems as an expert, but here I was on the other side of that fence. So I decided not to hang that up. And I thought, really seeing the system from both sides, I had more to offer. And so I kept going. But one of the things I did as well was start a nonprofit called Persevere. And that nonprofit teaches men and women inside prisons how to be software developers, full stack developers, trains them in all the life skills, puts them in residential housing as they leave prison, helps them transition in the most hardest thing ever, family reunification, financial literacy, Bob, and all the things it takes to really be successful And then we put them in jobs, technology, software development, engineering jobs, and just completely raise their social capital and give them a trajectory for success. So my passion is those people.
Wow, I am so impressed. Just thank you for doing what you do. The world needs it. Now, Sean, I am going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, the lovely Miss Amanda Filippelli. Filippelli, I said it wrong. Forgive me, Amanda. I'm horrible with the names, but I'll get it right one day. Amanda is an internationally recognized editor, writer, and book coach, and author of Blue Rooms. She started her career as an associate editor for the Owls Review in Chicago and has studied under a number of industry titans. An award-winning writer herself and publishing industry expert, Amanda has done it all, from freelance to copy editing to content editing to ghostwriting and book coaching to co-founding One Idea Press. Good morning, Amanda. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
I am wonderful. Now, you know, sometimes you can get a feel for people by their backgrounds, and your background just screams publisher. Your background just screams like, I have all of these books.
Yeah, this is my office. So welcome. My whole life is tied up in books and literature. So
tell us about yourself. Who are you? What do you do?
Sure. So I'm a professional editor, writer, book coach, but I came to that profession in kind of a different way. I've always been a writer, but growing up, you know, people constantly told me that I couldn't be a professional writer, that I would be this starving artist, that there's no career trajectory for that, and that I need a fallback plan. But also growing up, I really came up immersed in the mental health care world. I have major depressive disorder, PTSD, anxiety. And so I was really intimate with that world as a child, and went to school first for a degree in psychology, and worked in mental health care for 10 years with teenage adolescent survivors of trauma. And what I learned while working there was that storytelling was such a healing tool for these kids. We used to do storytelling workshops where we taught kids how to physically write down their stories. And we realized that this helped them not only better communicate with their therapists and with each other, but it helped them better communicate with themselves and step outside of themselves and be able to get kind of an aerial view on the things that they've been through and on their trauma so that they could make better meaning out of it. I left that job because I felt like I had just hit so much bureaucratic red tape with the projects that I wanted to do and the way I wanted to advance the programs. And my first business was actually a wraparound counseling service for kids who were either at risk or who were transitioning out of the system. And one of the big barriers in that world to proper treatment is insurance companies. And so my company was really founded on the idea that we weren't going to use insurance companies, that we were going to offer affordable care, accessible care. And that scaled really quickly. But the problem was that, the solution we were offering became the problem, and the insurance companies didn't want to support what we were doing. They didn't want to offer lower rates. And it kind of started to crush the system we had built. And so out of that was born One Idea Press, in that I wanted to use this idea to lift up underrepresented voices in my community and give them a platform to tell their story so that they could find healing both within themselves and within their family structures. And so I went back to school, got another degree, and have been working in publishing ever since. But also to prove to everybody, being told growing up that you can't be a working author was really bad advice. We do exist. We are out here in the world making it happen. And so most of my career now is teaching other people how to be working authors and working creatives and making money and self-sustaining. So for right now, we are hosting our annual writers conference at theauthorconference.com. And we do it May 1st and May 2nd in observance of Mental Health Awareness Month.
Wow, that's wonderful. So we're going to have to see if Amanda could work with Sean and you guys can figure out something together to make this world a better place. I love it. I love it. Sean says, call me, by the way.
Yes, I am so interested in what you do, Sean. I think it's wonderful.
Same, Amanda. Congratulations and thank you.
Yes. So Amanda, I am going to come right back to you. I just want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, the wonderful Miss Julia Broska. She is a speaker, author, entrepreneur. Julia is the owner of two successful businesses and regularly presents her Best Life Inc. principles to audiences large and small. As she travels the world, she is the living embodiment of a woman who lives her dream. When Julia isn't running her businesses, you can find her practicing yoga or meditation, rollerblading, or getting her sweat on at the gym, usually every day. Good morning, Julia. How are you? Julia, you're on mute, dear. Come join us. Come play.
Sorry. Good morning. Thank you very much.
You are so welcome. I'm excited to have you here. I love reading your bio, but I was like, is this a pre-COVID bio or is this a, do you do all this stuff now? Rollerblading?
The space has actually gone down a little bit, but yeah, that's exactly when I started doing all of it in COVID. But yeah, so pretty much after publishing the book, we decided a business out of it. So That's when it picked up during COVID.
Wow, exciting. Tell us what you're passionate about.
So I'm passionate about helping people live their dreams, really, because once upon a time, I definitely did not do that. So when I'm up, here's the whole story. So pretty much I was born in Ukraine into the war in 89, and my family had to move, and you know, we had to migrate to Australia. And when we were doing that, my dad actually had a stroke and developed dementia. Oh, wow. So then when he passed away when I was 10 years old, I kind of really went off the rails, and in party and had a really we'll call it like bad influences around and things like that. And I ended up sort of just being really negative, really angry. I lived in the victim mentality for a really long time. And I just thought, you know, what's the point of getting an education or what's the point of doing anything? I dropped out of 10 and I started running around the streets pretty, you know, my mom was chasing me all over Sydney. And it, you know, it was just, I just had a really like ugly negative attitude towards life.
Wow. So I believe Julia is calling in from Australia, around the world. So we have a little technical difficulties, but I am, if Julia can hear me. No, it's okay. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to come back to you, Julia. I just want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. Okay.
Okay.
So our next guest is the amazing Mr. Chris Bello. Chris is a college graduate that quit his corporate job 3 years in. He wanted to take hold of the reins of life and write his own story. After struggling with one side hustle after another, he went all in on residential real estate, where he has quickly caught momentum. Chris is also the host of the top-rated business podcast, the Entrepreneurial Motivation Podcast, where he documents his journey and interviews incredible guests. Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me here. I'm excited.
What do you think of the show so far and the guests?
It's really interesting. I just love being able to engage. And if anyone's heard of the app Clubhouse, it's kind of a similar platform where you can talk to other people instead of just listening to a podcast where you're like, oh, I wish I could ask this question. You can actually unmute yourself and ask the question.
So I really love that format. One. No, thank you for that. But I'm mad at Clubhouse right now.
Until I know. They get it on
Android, I will not be discussing Clubhouse. I'm so mad. Like,
okay, well, good to know.
All my friends are on it. They're like, come join this conversation. And I feel like the kid who doesn't have the good toy, you know, it's like, I can't play. I can't come out.
Well, I love your format of the show because it's actually very interactive and you can hear other people's stories and you can see people's engagement and then, you know, connect with other people, which is, you know, for those who have Clubhouse right now, it's pretty exciting because you can do that and interact.
I love being interactive. I get bored easily. I don't know if you can tell by everything I've said, but it's like, for me, I launched my first interview show in 2009 and it was just one-on-one interviews. So in 2020, I'm like, you know what? I have to do something more interesting. And it's been a lot of fun. So I'm excited to learn about you, Chris. Who are you? What do you do?
Thank you. Yeah. So like you mentioned on my bio, I mean, I went the corporate route. I studied, you know, supply chain in college, and I never really took the time to figure out what I actually wanted to do. Much like others have discussed before, I was like, oh, I'm not good at accounting. I dropped it. I took it in summer school. Like I barely know, you know, income statement expenses. My girlfriend's an accountant though. So it works out very well. And she can help me with all those things. But I just never really took the time to figure out what do I actually want to do. You know, I went to a school, and then most of my friends went to like a Jesuit high school. So I went there, and then most of my friends in Texas went to either Texas A&M or University of Texas. So I kind of just like followed the crowd and just, I did what I was supposed to do. I joined a couple of clubs, and it wasn't until I got to this dream job where I was sitting there and I'm like looking at everyone who's been there for 10 or 15 years. And I'm like, that's not where I want to be. I want to be doing my own thing. I don't want to be celebrating 30 years at this company and just have a corner office, but not much else to show for it. And those guys were working so much. I'm like, they can't be making that much more money than me. And even if they are, I don't think it would be worth it because I don't want to spend 60 hours a week in these four white walls. I worked in an oil and gas company, 600 people in one location, big cafeteria, right? It just felt like I was in a prison in a way. And so I started to wonder what could life be outside the cubicle. And of course, I tried many side hustles that didn't work out. I wasn't really committing all the way to any one thing, which of course, like anyone else on this call or listening to this show right now understands, if you're focused on too many things, you're not going to be successful at any of them. And so I went all in on residential real estate. I decided to become an expert. I changed the LinkedIn profile. I embraced it. And that's when I started to catch momentum. I'm attracting clients. I'm not chasing clients. I don't have to call anyone. They reach out to me in response to my podcast, my social media posts, Clubhouse conversations. And so it's a very freeing experience. And like Bob talked about earlier, a lot of the money mindset stuff is what I've had to work on, you know, understanding that I can attract and create wealth and I won't squander it and spend it on things that I shouldn't, which I'm still kind of working on that. But I mean, the affirmations I've said before of like, okay, I am a top producing real estate agent and investor. I earn $25,000 a month or whatever, like all those things that I've used to affirm have become true while helping clients and changing lives. And of course, the podcast is kind of like a passion project at the moment where I get to interview amazing guests such as everyone here on this show today. And I just love talking to people. So that's why I'm always on Clubhouse too.
We keep going with the Clubhouse, Chris. We talked about this.
I talk a lot. We'll say that I'm talking on this radio show. I won't mention it again until yes. It's on Android.
Exactly. No, we have to get it there. But some of the things that you said were very, come back, Chris. Some of the things you said were very interesting. I'm not finished with you yet.
I just don't want any background noise because there's a WeWork. There's some people, you know, walking the hallway. But yeah, ask away. I'm ready.
When you mentioned the affirmations, I love that. I'm really big on affirmations. But then when you mentioned the aspect about I won't squander it and spend it on things I don't need, I'm like, you lost me there, Chris. Because everybody who knows me knows, I tell them, like, when I get the amount of money I'm going to get, I'm going to buy a tiger. And people are like, Sharifa, you don't need a tiger. I'm like, no, I know. Nobody needs a tiger. Tigers are not basic needs, but that's what I want. So for you, I'm going to rephrase it a little bit, that you have enough to squander, so that you have more than enough, so that whatever you want to do, you have the ability to do it. Because I'm going to tell you, I might just buy California.
I have big goals, and my vision board has all the exotic cars and private jets and stuff like that. Go. So, but I guess, I mean, I know I've studied enough to understand, and I know Bob can talk on this as well. I listened to a book called The Psychology of Money recently. And if you're spending more than you make at any level, that's like, you're basically never going to be successful or save up and build wealth. And so that's why I just want to manage and make sure that if I'm making $100,000 or $200,000 or $1 million a year, I'm not spending that or excess. But yeah, I mean, if you want to buy a tiger, great. That may be squandering money for me, cause like I have two cats and a dog and I don't want the tiger to eat them, but I might get a private jet, you know, like I'd like to do, I don't know. It just depends on what's interesting to you, which is part of why I dropped everything. And I just moved to Denver, Colorado a couple of days ago. I want lifestyle freedom. I don't want to have to be tied to a location, and I'm kind of living that dream right now.
Yes, that's powerful. But we're going to get you way more than 100,000. Chris, you need to come work with me or Bob.
No, I'm just saying, for whoever's listening, 1 million, 10 million. I don't know. Whatever
10 million. We like that. We like 10 billion. We like Bob. Talk to him, Bob.
Set the bar high. It's all possible. Let it absolutely. In. Let it in. 10 yes. billion. I like that number.
10 billion.
I do too.
You can watch do a lot of good with Bezos. That.
Yeah, you can.
10 billion has a nice ring to it. Now, I want to go over to Sean for a moment. And one of the things that I do on this show, I tell people, I look at people sometimes and I judge them. Now, Sean, if I were going to look at you, I would not even imagine that you had been to prison at all. You look like this successful businessman that everybody wants to be. You're that guy that when we were young, we wanted to be Sean Hostman. I'm telling you. But how did you get from the individual who was in jail 12 times to the man we see before us today?
Oh, that's a good question. But I'd say like most things, there's internal intrinsic motivation, right? There's internal intrinsic feelings of self-worth and I also believe in the world, whether there's religion or people have faith in certain things, I think people have to learn to forgive themselves. So you can say it's the power of redemption. Mine doesn't happen to be tied to religious anything. I just believe in yourself. So it was that, and then it was the support of some people around me. So I recognize about what I call being ready, willing, and enabled. And that's a funny word, enabled. It's a negative word in our world. We've made it negative, but I believe it actually is the wrong use of the word. It means to be empowered. And sometimes we need to be empowered by ourselves. And sometimes it really helps if other people lift us up and empower us. And I was lucky enough to have certain things in my life, including believing in myself and being able to forgive myself for some really bad decisions and the destruction that caused, and just decide I'm going to pick myself back up. With the help of some other people, I just put my best foot forward next. I refuse to look in the past about that. I use it now as my voice to help other people recognize that they've been to jail. They feel bad about their decisions, but I want them to feel empowered, forgive themselves, and move on. I just need a structure for them to really feel like there's hope that they can move on. And so that has to be there, or you're just not going to believe it.
Yes. Well, I see definitely you have quite a support group that turned out this morning to support you. And that's powerful. Nicola Spurgeon is a friend of yours.
Nicole.
Yes. She says, yay, Sean. She's excited. She's here supporting you. So whatever you're doing, people came out to see you today.
She's a beautiful human being, an amazing, amazing woman.
Yes. So I'm going to go over to Amanda. We talked to Sean about what it was like for him after he went to prison 12 times and continuing on his journey. Let's talk about you and your journey. You had a different journey, but how did you overcome and keep going?
Yeah, so it's there's a really loaded answer to a really loaded question. For me, it's been having to personally break down the stigma around treatment. As a person who's been hospitalized, as a person who is also on a sober journey, it took me a long time to even admit those things to people outside of myself. It took me a long time to kind of take a dose of my own medicine. I mean, I've spent a career telling people not to feel, stigmatized by the system and to be open about their healing and to tell their story, while I also spent a lot of time hiding my own. So for me, sustaining that healing journey has really been about being honest and being transparent and making sure that I'm able to set boundaries where I need to set them. I think that's a really difficult thing for people who struggle with mental illness in any type of way, because boundaries seem really blurry. They seem difficult because when you're searching for help, it's difficult to say like, this is where positive help comes from. This is who a supportive person is. And this is a dangerous situation for me. So for me, it's been about surrounding myself with people who are, and I love this idea, Sean, of reclaiming enabled. So I would love to say, like, it's been about surrounding myself with people who enable me in an empowering way. The more I practice being that honest, the more I practice telling my story, I can use my platform to let other people do the same, for them to feel permission to do that same thing. So much of this has been about being consistent with treatment, being consistent. I always tell writers too, as a writer, A daily writing practice is part of your mental health. Your mental health relies on your creativity and the expression of your creativity. And we don't spend enough time encouraging people to use creativity as a coping mechanism, as a healing mechanism. You know, you don't have to be a famous artist. You don't have to be a famous writer. You don't even have to feel like you have a certain amount of talent to use your creativity to explore the internal facets of what's going on with your mental health. And so a consistent daily practice of creativity for me has been the thing that has sustained me over the years for sure.
Wow. I think that's very interesting and impressive. Bob, for me, is laughter. Laughter heals. That's what I use for my stand-up comedy specials. And I really believe that. And I think as a society, as a people, we need more laughter right now. How is it working at the Comedy Store?
I love working at the Comedy Store. I actually became CFO because I was doing stand-up. I was running a show there. Wow. And one of my friends told Mitzi, the owner, hey, Bob's a CPA. They were having some financial issues, like paying their payroll taxes and not dealing with basics. And so for me, laughter has been my medicine. And I think as everybody shared, I think it's important for people listening to realize that most of us have all had some kind of struggle. You know, for me, I was very socially, I just learned how to be very invisible. I used comedy as a way to be able to say what I was thinking, and I felt it was therapeutic and I felt safe behind a microphone. But, you know, if I was sitting in a group of people I didn't know and people asked us to go around and say our name and where we were from, I would get nauseous. You know, I had a lot of childhood trauma and PTSD and stuff that I wasn't even really aware of. I just knew I lived my life in complete fear for many, many years. And comedy was a way for me to relate to other people because I could say something mean or say something funny and go, no, I'm kidding. Like, so I could use that as a veil of protection. But I think for me, comedy has been the way that I've worked with my clients. Storytelling is a way to get people to relax. I tell funny stories and the client will say, oh, that's me. Oh, is it? I didn't realize. I was just sharing this funny story. I didn't realize there was a parallel. And so I use humor as a way to just like break down barriers. When I've traveled around the world and I don't speak a lot of other languages, but laughter is something that's universal. I can joke with people, I can play with people, and we can all join in the laughter because that's something that we all share.
Absolutely. Julia, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
We lost you for
that connection. Yes, yeah, sorry, something was wrong.
No, it's okay. You're here now. We can hear you. I want you to continue because we didn't have a couple of minutes. We talked a lot about affirmations. We spoke about people's journey, Sean's journey, Amanda's journey. Chris is out here playing on Clubhouse instead of focusing. Tell us.
You brought it up.
Tell us a little bit more about you, Julia.
Yes, sir. I just had a bit of a different upbringing in the sense of, you know, I was bullied in school, I dropped out, and I just had a negative attitude towards life. And then I ended up being in a 7-year relationship where, and you know, I thought I was going to marry the guy, and then he hit me. And I think that's kind of where I drew the line. And I definitely didn't know where to go or where to walk after that. You know, I didn't know if the grass was going to be greener on the other side. And I just started walking. And from that, I enjoyed cooking a lot. And I didn't know anything about healthy eating and things like that, nutrition. So I just started cooking and trying to figure that out. And that started my first business, which was a meal prep company before they were really popular. And from there, we just kind of grew. And I did love writing since I was a little kid, and very similar to Amanda. I was always told that, you know, writing, you can't do that for a job, go study, things like that. But I just wrote for myself and, you know, journaled and things like that. And eventually I had so much writing and stories. And I thought, if I can put that together with like everything I've learned, like the hard way that I did it, and put it in a book, then, you know, maybe it could help someone else not do the same, you know, not take the same path that I took. And so that's kind of where Best Lifing came about. And it's all about, you know, helping people overcome their limiting beliefs, because a lot of the time, you know, your limiting beliefs come from what other people tell you you can and can't do, and then your own experiences as well, what you decide you can and can't do. And so I'm a big believer of, if I say I can't do it, definitely gonna go test it out. And yeah, so we help people overcome those limiting beliefs and live their dreams essentially by creating fulfillment in what I call the seven areas of life. And then once I published the book, just after I lost my job in COVID, it just, you know, popped off, became an international bestseller, and people started asking for coaching and courses. And now we're in our own beautiful office in Miami Beach doing just that.
So, I love it. I can see the background. You got that little area where you can kind of see out over there. That's beautiful. Yeah. Nice office.
We do yoga and meditation out there and all sorts of wellness fun.
It looks fun. Julia, what would you say is your biggest accomplishment?
Probably starting this business and writing the book. I was so scared to write the book because it's got a lot of really like deep stories about, you know, nearly overdosing on drugs and drink driving and all the crazy things I used to get up to. I was petrified of my mom finding it and reading it, you know, let alone the rest of the world. But yeah, once I was able to sort of overcome that, as an artist, so I guess you only find out if your work is any good by people telling you. And I didn't believe it until people started telling me that it was actually helping, and the intention was to at least help one person. And the fact that I was able to do that for many really just sparked me up. And I would definitely say that overcoming that for myself was probably my biggest accomplishment so far.
Wow, impressive. I love it. Sean, do you have a book?
I do not have a book. Nope.
Yet. We're going to get you a book.
Maybe I want to read that book. There. We'll
I definitely
see.
Want to read it.
Everyone wants to read your book, Sean.
There's a lot of stuff.
I know, because Nicole, we spoke about Nicole earlier, but Nicole says, yes, Sean, I wouldn't miss it for the world. This man has changed my life. And then Travis Stacy Allen chimed in and he said, good morning, Sean. He's here supporting you. So you've changed people's lives and there's no book?
Yeah, well, maybe we'll write together, all of them and me someday. Yep. Transformational stuff. Those people that are talking to you are amazing humans, transforming lives, for real.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Amanda, we got to get Sean a book.
I was going to say, call me when you're ready for a book coach, because I'm right here.
I love yeah. it. A book coach. I've never even actually heard that term. Most people say a publisher or agent. Okay. So you coach people through the process of writing the book.
Yeah. So one of the things that struck me after 2 degrees and studying under industry experts and doing all this work I put into learning, I still was so confused by publishing. You know, it's especially in the age of self-publishing, I think a lot of people just don't know what's best for them. And also a lot of people who, even if you have some writing talent, there are some things you need to know about how to properly structure a narrative. And so what I do is I've created a one-stop shop for writers. So we do everything from help you with content creation through finding that right publishing path for you. So that means if you're self-publishing, we do production and design, marketing, publishing, coaching, all that. Or if you're interested in traditional publishing, then we also help you down that path to find and secure a literary agent and sell your book to a publishing house. But all of that starts with the content. All of that starts with being able to tell your story in a way that it deserves to be told. And so as a book coach, my job is to make sure that people get to write out their stories in a way that's rewarding for them and not frustrating, because so many people stop writing their book or don't tell their story because they don't have the tools that they need. They don't have the education or the knowledge that they need. And it just feels hard. You know, everybody here has done it. It is a difficult process. A book coach is really a very specific service that helps you navigate that.
I like that. Sean, the people are supporting you. I don't know why, what happened today, but they're having their own conversation. So Nicole agrees that you need a book, Sean.
All right. Then, I'll be calling Amanda after this show.
Yeah.
And then Travis says, Stacy needs a book. And I don't know who Stacy is.
These are all people, if you think about this world, I mean, again, these are marginalized people, not them, but this community of people that get forgotten or get considered to be disposable. And what I have found just as in them, just how they're reacting and just how they're interacting, which is very sweet, but it's them. And there's a community being formed for people who are all the talent, all the heart, all the humanity, all the funniness, all the beautifulness of these people, but they get labeled. and they get labeled through a felony, or they get labeled through interaction with the system. Their children get labeled, their families get labeled. And so I love that they are acting like the community that they are right now, as they're apparently just going crazy on the keyboard. They're a community and they support each other. And that's what I love about that.
That's wonderful.
Can I just add something to that too? Real quickly, I just wanted to say that what's interesting to me about this group of people we have here and what Sean's saying about the people supporting him is that there's no difference between those people and us. There's no difference between anybody. I mean, everybody here has these incredible stories, these heartbreaking stories, these triumphant stories, the same that they do. You know, the only difference between those types of situations are where you are in the world, your degree of privilege, how you are able to manage or navigate the system. I mean, all of us have been in these types of situations that could have landed us in those places that we think about in a stigmatized way, whether that's jail or the juvenile system or hospitalization. But those people are no different than us. And I think, like, I love this podcast because I just think that conversations like this are so important to show listeners that we all have these stories. We all have come up this way. We all do actually understand each other. So I just think that storytelling in that way is so powerful.
Yes.
Yes, I agree. Thank you for saying that, Amanda.
I was going to see if I could add something as well after what Amanda just said. So I love what Sean was mentioning earlier, the enabled part, because a lot of it in a lot of my podcasts too, I mean, people reach out, thank you so much for letting me know that was possible. If you don't believe it's possible, you'll never try. And because when you start to talk to other people and have these conversations like we're having right now, you get ideas like, oh, maybe it is possible for me to do real estate in Houston from another city that I'm not even in, right? So I'm here now. I'm a testament to that because I saw that others that I know have done it as well. And so when you believe that it's possible, you get around people who have done what you're trying to do. That is very key in being able to change your situation. And then one more thing I wanted to add as well is that we're not a tree. We're not stuck where we are. A lot of times we feel like we are, right? We don't have to have roots in a certain place. And if you don't like your environment or where you're at, it just takes a little bit of coaching and understanding that you can move and change that situation. So I am really enjoying this conversation. Thank you for everything that you guys have been adding so far.
You're welcome. Don't go anywhere. Stop trying to disappear, Chris, because my next question was for you. Now, for me, I love hosting talk shows. I have written 2 books, but for me is the ability to sit down and have a conversation right here, right now, based on what's going on in the world or what's going in my mind. Do you feel that way being a podcast host?
I do. Honestly, I would say 80 or 90% of what I do right now is mainly focused on talking to people, podcasts mainly. Like, I think, I'm usually doing 2 or 3 interviews or discussions in a day. A week or two ago, I talked basically 4 hours straight with 15 or 30 minute breaks in between to get a quick bite or go to the restroom or whatever. But I was talking to guests from all over the world. You know, I'll talk to someone in Canada and then Australia and then someone in California. And the ideas and the lessons that I'm able to extract so quickly from across the world, from people like on this call, from different backgrounds, different experiences, different ages, it's so powerful because I think that you're able to teach something, but you also learn something. We all have something that, you know, we're maybe a little smarter in a certain area. We've studied a little more than someone else, but then there's another area that maybe we're not so great at, like a financial area or accounting, for example. And so that's why it's really powerful to have that network. And I think, like you mentioned, podcasting is a great way to have those conversations in a way that, especially with COVID, like maybe you're not able to talk to 15 different people. You're not getting coffee 5 times a week as often, but you can do Zoom calls and podcast conversations. So I found that to be very therapeutic and helpful.
Absolutely. So
can I say something about this group?
Yes, Sean.
Mine. And I'm just going to call it courage, but Sharifa, you started it off. I don't know who has the guts or the courage to run for city council or run for political office. That's amazing, right? And I think of Bob. I could never get up on a stage and try to tell a joke. That would kind of paralyze me. And yet you suffered from social paralysis. I don't know what the word is, but you got up on stage and tell a joke. You know, Amanda was told she could never, be a thriving writer. And yet she decided to not only do that, she took on the biggest criminal enterprise in the country. Sorry for saying it that way, which is health insurance companies in some ways, right? And Julia, with a background that just sounds like it did have some serious issues, thought she could tell the world how to get through difficult struggles in a book. I just think your courage and is what's coming out amongst your guests. I don't know how they're else connected, but man, this is some courage that I am finding inspiring. So thank you.
Same here.
Yes, so Sean, you're going to keep it up, but I'm telling you, you got a whole bunch of people who are saying you have to write the book. So it's wonderful what you're saying, but we got to get
I will. I was going to say about Chris. He started a podcast, apparently 80 of them. I don't know what's going on, but just the courage. Anyway, that's enough for me, but I really appreciate that from this.
Ooh. No, that's powerful because Redhead Marketing NPR says they will write the press release for your to announce your book launch and book tour. So we've in one show in less than 45 minutes.
Yeah.
A book written, a book coach, yeah. A press release, and a book tour. This is what you call pre-marketing. We marketed this book.
I don't know. Start the pre-sales right now. We'll go ahead and start the pre-sales. Go ahead and pre-order.
I feel like I'm in school. Thank you.
You are so welcome. Bob, this has been a wonderful conversation, but a lot of what we talked about is that money mindset, how we think about money. And our guests, they're willing to go ahead and get any of those negative thoughts out of their mind and just focus. What are your thoughts on the conversation, Bob?
Yeah, I think the word that's come up a lot here is mindset. And I think that that is such an important component or the main component of having a healthy relationship with money, of looking at our self-worth and saying, I'm worth it. A lot of us, myself, when I was writing the book, it was like, who am I to write a book? Who am I to share my story? And realizing that I'm me. And so my experience is unique. I don't have to be an expert in everything to be I am an expert in my life. Mm-hmm. And so for me, learning about money and not making it the end all be all, being able to have a relationship with money to spend less than you make or to make more than you spend, to be able to look at that stuff and, you know, with money comes setting boundaries. Boundaries was not something that happened in my family. We did not set boundaries. And so being able to say, I'm allowed to have the money. I don't have to give it away, which is what I did. I had to give it away so that I didn't have to share it with people that told me that I had to share it with them. And so if we can start to learn that stuff, because we make these decisions about money when we're 4, 5, 6 years old. A story happens, we make it the truth, and then we use that as a guiding principle for the rest of our lives, unless we stop and get conscious. And so if we can't reverse engineer, go back and look and say, oh my gosh, at 6 years old, I was told I was greedy, or I'm not enough, or that I'm stupid, or whatever those things are, that then permanently attach to my mindset, and to be able to work through that and start to say, wait a minute, I am worthy, I do deserve, I am allowed to have a voice. And people might not like it. I think one of the things that held me back was that if I stood up, people might judge me, tell me I'm wrong, or correct me, or whatever. Do it anyway. I didn't know that. Like, I thought, it has to be perfect. I have to be received by everybody. I have to be loved by everybody. No. Show up, bring your voice, do it anyway, even if people don't rally for you, even if people don't believe in what you're bringing. If you believe it, bring it. Have your voice. Step up, step out, show up.
Amen.
I love it. Mm-hmm.
Bob, I think what you're saying is so interesting, and like, I want to work with you. I think that in the creative world, that creative professions are the only professions in the world that people think it's okay to try to negotiate price on. Mm-hmm. And so I think for a lot of people trying to be full-time creatives, full-time artists, full-time writers, they feel like their worth is negotiable. So this idea of like, excavating that mindset we've built as children, and then as adults being able to combat that, I think for the creatives in the world, your message is so important.
Yeah, and thank you for saying that. And it is so true, whether it's television, whether it's stand-up, whether it's poets, singers, it's always like, don't pay the talent, they're just the talent, right? And I personally believe that deep down we're all artists. Like, I think we have to nurture the artist in every single one of us, because that's what I think the world needs. more accountants and lawyers and professionals and more cubicles. I think we need everybody to recognize that we're all artists.
Chris, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I love that. I was going to add, I mean, a lot of that, we talked about like the programming. I mean, we basically, from 4 or 5 years old, whatever environment we were in. And it's crazy to me because like, I tell people, I don't even remember what happened before like third grade. I kind of remember like the playground and Pokemon cards, but it's scary to me that so much could have happened before I'd even remember. And I mean, I have a great family, parents are happy, still together, all that good stuff, still alive. But so many things that we believe now were a result of what we believed then. And I still hear it now. My ear's a little more trained. I'll hear my parents say stuff like, oh, that's too expensive. Or is it really worth it to have to talk to a therapist? Like $200, you could just talk to us. And I'm like, you know, it's different, right? Like, okay, mom, dad, did you guys
I'm
go
talking
to
my therapist about you guys, by yeah, the way.
Like, yeah. I appreciate the feelings, but like, come on. I was just living with them for like 6 months, for example, before I sold my house in Houston and moved to Denver. And like, wow. I'm catching on to a lot of like fixed mindset stuff from my dad. And I'm like, okay, he's complaining a lot. Stop being so negative. So coaching them, but understanding that how I feel about money now, I need to shift it. And I need to understand that paying $300 a month to work from any WeWork, for example, is not an expensive thing. It is worth it for me to have this flexibility, to have this quiet space, to get away from the pets and all of that, for example. So a lot of it goes back to mindset. Just, I can't harp on that enough. And Mindset is a great book. I'm sure many of you have read it by Carol Dweck. Talks about fixed versus growth mindset. So yeah, thanks for letting me add that.
No, that's what we came here to do. We came here to hear your thoughts and your views, and you're speaking and I can completely relate. I tell people, first of all, I'm a convenience person. So that means almost every night is Postmates. Everything I have is delivered. I don't want to go.
It's expensive. Oh my gosh, right?
But it's convenient. And I remember one story that stands out with my aunt. You talk about family. I was near her house, and she lives about 30 minutes away, and I love oxtails. And so there was this restaurant, and I wanted to go and get oxtails. And she was like, well, how much is it? I said, it's like $13. She was like, that's too much. I'm like, well, I want to get the oxtail. She was like, you don't need to spend all that money. I'm like, but I want oxtail. She's like, no, you got to make it yourself. So this is my aunt. She's older. So, I'm like, okay. So
we all have that family member, right?
I know. I go to the grocery store. This is my story. I go to the grocery store. I buy the meat for the oxtails. I buy all of the ingredients. Do you know how much it cost me for all of the ingredients and the oxtails? $43. Oh. So I spent $43 to save $13.
How much time did it take to prepare it, too?
Exactly. So yeah. Now I just ordered the oxtails. Bob, you can have that story. Use it as an example, because we always try to save money and
that's
it
right.
costs us in the end.
Oh, that's right. I'll drive 2 hours to find a free parking space and have spent $20 of gas and 2 hours of my time just not to pay, because it's the principle.
And people don't know how to value their time, right? Like I read a book about this where when you see people waiting in line for like a free $5 Popeye sandwich for like 2 hours, they're right. valuing their time at like $2.50 an hour. That's crazy. Like, why not just go add value, generate $1,000 and, you know, Uber Eats it to your house if you really want it.
Yes, that's me. Uber Eats, Postmates, they love me. They know me by name.
You know, the thing is, I think you should spend where you feel comfortable spending. It's not about, like, somebody else's spending on the oxtails might not be somebody else's spending. It doesn't make it right or wrong. For me, the measure of my spending is it in alignment with what I say I want my life to be? So if I'm trying to save up for things and I keep impulse spending and draining my bank accounts, it's not in alignment with me saying, I really want this for my future. And so it's not about that's the wrong thing, or you shouldn't buy a pedigree dog, you should get a rescue. It's not right or wrong. It's what's my comfort level, and is it in integrity and in alignment with what I say I'm about?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This has been an amazing show. I loved it. Loved meeting all of the guests. Now we are down to the last few minutes of the show. We only have a few minutes left. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And Ms. Julia, we did not give you a lot of time. I apologize, technical difficulties, but let's go ahead and start with you. What can they take away from your appearance?
I just want to say that anything is possible. Don't listen to when people tell you what you can and can't do. And yeah, it's just, it's all about what you believe you can do and try it out anyway.
Absolutely. And if people want to find more information on what you do, how can they find you?
We're all on all social media platforms at Best Lifing, and then www.bestlifing.com.
Yes, Best Lifing, I-N-G. Thank you, Julia. Amanda, what do you have for us?
I would just want everybody to leave here excited to tell their story in whatever format that feels good to them, and to share with others and to let other people see you and what you've been through. You can find me everywhere at Editor Amanda on all social media platforms or at amandafilippelli.com. You can also go to theauthorconference.com and check out our writers conference. We're all about transparency, accessibility, and community. So it's a very affordable price. It's a very inclusive conference. We've extended early bird through today for just $59. So we'd love to have you if you're interested in exploring your story.
Absolutely. Thank you. Chris, what do you have for us?
My podcast tagline is less dreaming, more doing. I think too many people think about what they want to do for too long. And sometimes I do things too quickly without thinking enough. So there's a little balance in there, but I mean, make the move, you know, do the skydive, travel. I mean, I guess after COVID or safely. I mean, I'm a big traveler. I've gone scuba diving in Thailand. I've gone skydiving. I mean, in Houston, not super exciting place, but go skydive and do things that you're outside of your comfort zone, right? I just drove through snow. Haven't really ever done that before. Drove a U-Haul. Never did that before. A trailer. So try things that are outside your comfort zone. Do things that you only have one life, you know? Sure, you might do things that kind of risk that life. If you like ski a black diamond mountain, you've never gone skiing, maybe don't do that right away. But also, you don't want to get to your deathbed and realize that you have a lot of regrets, things that you've never tried, a life not unlived. And then also remember that if anyone ever did it, you can too. So look to others for motivation and inspiration. And when you know that it's possible, you take the actions required and you kind of figure out the steps that you need to take to get to that same place. And then for those listening, you can find me if you go to chrisbello.com, just my name, or on Instagram. I'm most active on there. And the app that you don't want me to say, I'm on there too. So, but it's been great talking with you all today. And thank you once again for putting this together. I really enjoyed it.
You are so welcome. I appreciate you, Chris. I have to check you out. Bob, what do you want us to know?
Yeah. So for people out there, I would say move towards your fear. Whatever you fear, move towards it and find out that you'll survive. I would say to get really curious about yourself and others. Wow, I really like to overspend. Why is that? What is that about me? And just get really curious without judgment. And with that, I would say be kind to yourself. Like life is hard sometimes. There's lots of challenges. Life is amazing. Be kind to yourself. Be kind to others. And lastly, I would say look for gratitude. I think especially in the U.S., we don't appreciate what we have. We have a lot. Even in our worst times, we have so much. And I'm so grateful to be alive. I'm grateful to be here. And I just really encourage people to look for gratitude.
Absolutely. Yes.
And people can find me at themoneynerve.com. That's Nerve. And it's my shameless plug. The Money Nerve is my book. Navigating the Emotions of Money. And we also do online courses, Mastering the Emotions of Money, helping people figure out their money journeys to have a healthier relationship.
I think that's wonderful. I think so many people need that. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Sean, you going to come back in a year and talk about your book?
Yes. My last thing to say would just be, everybody just gave all their contact info. Are we going to get that a different way?
Yes.
Okay. Because I really do want to contact the folks on here, including you, Sharifa, but I didn't know what to expect when I came into this. I think you're an amazing facilitator and talk show host. I think these people here, I want all of you, Amanda, Chris, and Bob, and Julia, I want you to all share your stories with the folks that I work with. They would lose their minds over the sense of power and of value that you bring. Just about gets me emotional, but I think that I want people to remember to stand with those who have been marginalized so the margins get erased. It's not my quote, it's from another great person who's a mentor of mine, and perseverenow.org is the organization. It's a 501c3 nonprofit, transforming people's lives. You can volunteer, you can donate, but you know, it's that's not what this plug was for. It's for the people that we're dealing with. And so I'd love to talk to everybody else. I'm going to go buy your books. I'm going to go write a book with you. I'm going to go get on your podcast, but I want the folks I'm working with to know who you are.
Absolutely. We thank you for that, Sean. We will make that happen. I'll get everybody's information to you. But I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show does not mean you're not important. And it doesn't mean we still don't need your support, because we do. Please go ahead and share the show with your network. And while you're sharing the show, please support our guests. Pick up a copy of their books, follow them, follow their podcast, follow them on social media, reach out to them. Their website link is in the Facebook post. But when you reach out to them, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Thank you.